Hi,
Mark Schneider. Good evening.
Good evening, Mark.
Hello, Bruce.
Bruce, there are apologies from Philip Shepherd. I don't know if you saw his post.
I did, yes.
Good. And Tony Holmes at the last minute also couldn't be here, so he's given his proxy to Tony and Greg.
Hello, I'm Colour just joined.
Jessica Wu sends her apologies too, and she's given if there's proxy necessary to Mark Schneider.
Hello, Tony Harris joining.
Hi, Tony.
Hi.
Dan Halloran just joined.
Hi, Dan. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Grant joining.
Hi, Grant. Good morning to you.
Thank you.
I think we'll get started then. It's Bruce Tonkin speaking, and the objective of this call was it's a follow-up to the last meeting of the committee, which had some questions for the General Counsel that it was seeking answers to. The first question was, would the ICANN board need to approve changes to a GTLD registry agreement, or would there be cases where the staff could approve? And in my discussions with John Jeffrey, General Counsel of ICANN, the key question, and this is kind of my interpretation of the discussion, is whether the change to a contract would be material. And we discussed some of the recent changes, such as the .name change, where they proposed to offer registrations at the second level rather than at the third level, as was in their initial proposal. And that was seen as an example of something that would be a material change and would need ICANN board approval. And that would have been an example of something that could probably have gone through a quick look process, in which case the ICANN staff would have done a review, they would have sought some external advice potentially, and then they would have made a recommendation to the ICANN board, which would have been published 45 days prior to the board meeting. That proposal would have been subject to 30 days public comment. The staff would then have prepared a recommendation incorporating the public comments to the ICANN board for decision. So at this point, and the other comment was how much notice would the ICANN board require prior to making a decision, and the view was that the ICANN staff are aiming to get recommendations to the board 45 days prior to the board meeting, and that sort of sets some of the time frame.
Ken Stubb.
Hi, Ken, thanks for joining. Just going through the first of the questions, Ken, there's a bit of echo there. Okay. So at this point, I'll really open it up for the committee to ask questions or seek clarification on that first point. Would anyone like to join the queue regarding the question of in what circumstances the board requires to give approval versus purely done via a staff process? So are there any questions on that? Ken, did you have any questions on when the board requires to give approval from the registry constituency point of view?
Hi, it's Marilyn Hayes.
Hi, Marilyn. Thanks for joining.
Bruce, this is Lucy. I have just a quick question.
Yes, go ahead, Lucy.
So, who decides whether the change is a material change or not? Is that something that's going to be determined by the board, or do we have some guidance as to what constitutes material change? Or is it just based on normal contract law?
My guess would be that would be a decision that the general counsel would make
as to
whether he believed it was a contractual or a material change, and then I'm assuming a question for general contractual law. Do you want to comment on that, John?
No, I think that is correct. The appropriate viewpoint would be from a legal standard based on the contractual relationship.
So okay.
The materiality of the relation based on the contract.
Okay, just a reminder that if anybody's got a speakerphone or is using a mobile phone, it's best if you can mute the call. There's a fair bit of echo on the line at the moment.
Question, Bruce. This is Keith.
Hello, Thomas here. I'm rejoining.
It's hard. Star six.
Actually, yeah, you can just use six.
You are now muted.
Thank you.
Okay, that's sounding a bit better. Do you want to ask a question, Ken?
No, Bruce. Thanks.
Okay, I'll move on to the next question, which was regarding the criteria for evaluation. And the discussion I had on this with the general counsel is that the committee came up with quite a long list of issues that could be considered when deciding whether a change would have a significant impact. And ultimately, they probably come down to two main areas. One is on the technical side, is the change likely to affect stability, interoperability, or security of the internet? And some of the questions that would be asked to try and determine that issue would be, is the change likely to affect the software of other users on the internet? Is the change consistent with internet standards? And there was a number of other points. The recommendation was basically to frame the criteria in terms of the question of does it affect the stability, interoperability or security, and then list some of the issues that would be considered in forming that opinion, and those issues were some of which we discussed in the meeting in Rome.
Could the second set of matters be posted as examples? That is the general principle, which is the stability of the internet, and then such as, and then the other component.
So you're suggesting, Kyoshi, that you give examples of issues that would cause a problem, or?
Yeah. I mean, I think, in my humble opinion, the general principle is that the stability and interoperability of the system as a whole is not affected, And then I think we came up with a list of things that could be relevant. But I think that list can be used just as a way of example.
Yeah, I think one of the issues I have with some of those issues that we considered, if they're viewed in isolation, they can probably have, I guess, unintended consequences. So if one of the questions was, is the standard open or closed? If that's the only question you ask, then yeah, there are certainly some cases where a standard may not be an IETF standard, but it may be some other commonly used industry standard, and there's plenty of software that can use it. So you'd probably be looking at the issue as a whole, which is whether it affects stability, interoperability or security. And then the second, the issue or the issue to consider is it using internet standards?
I agree.
Okay.
I'm Carrie here, Bruce. Do we really want to use the word standards? I thought the IETF, very carefully, refers to these things as RFCs.
Yes, although if you actually look at the definitions of RFCs, they do come into a number of categories. And because some of them are information, some of those RFCs are referred to as informational, which they're really just giving some guidance to people, and some of them are actually referred to as internet standards or standards track.
I thought standards track was as strong as it ever got.
That's correct, yeah.
It's Marilyn, Bruce. Can I ask, and I'm working, I have the diagrams, but I don't have all the rest of the material in front of me. I'm sort of losing track of, we're trying to come up with what we would be posting, is that right, to what we would say in this section?
This is in the terms of the diagrams, if you look at the quick look diagram, there's a section where the registry needs to provide some information to ICANN.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the section where ICANN needs to go through some sort of quick look process and make some decision about whether the change should be approved or not. And then what we're talking about is what is the criteria for approving a change. And in Rome we came up with a list of issues and there were sort of 20-odd. And then I undertook to talk to the General Counsel to see how to really draft the words, I guess, that the staff could then use to make that decision. And if we have, say, a list of 20 things and each one of them has to have, say, a positive answer, that's going to be difficult because there's, in each of those issues we raise, there's degrees, you know, so you might... a change that changes, say, the DNS standard fundamentally is going to have a very big impact, whereas perhaps, say, changing a parameter in the standard may not. And really what the council advised is that it's really the bigger question that needs to be answered, which is, as Kiyoshi said, the general principle is it shouldn't affect the stability, interoperability and security. And then within that principle, we can provide some issues for the ICANN staff to consider, and we can list some of those issues that we discussed in Rome. And those are issues to consider in answering the bigger question rather than trying to individually answer each of the issues.
Sure. Here's my point. Thank you for that. At what point are we going to take input and comment on this from the Security and Stability Advisory Committee? We have both the responsibility and the authority to ask for expert opinion, and it would seem to me that we ought to do that.
Yes, one of the things I can do is provide the Security and Stability committee with the list of issues that we raised underneath this topic of security and stability, and ask them on whether they think additional issues should be added or whether some of the ones that we suggested should be subtracted. I can definitely ask that question.
Yeah.
Are there any other... Just moving on from the technical one for a moment, onto the competition. The other broad set of questions is whether a change is going to impact on the competition in the industry. And again, this is, the idea was to word this fairly broadly. And John was suggesting that we use competition in a fairly broad sense of the word, rather than purely dealing with, I guess, with competition of domain registrations. And then some of the issues that we had raised under that kind of banner, you know, things such as, you know, does it impact, unnecessarily impact third parties in the context of competition. So, for example, trademark law could be viewed as related to that, in that a particular person that has a particular brand or trademark.
Bruce, I'm sorry, but the static on the phone is so bad that at this point I really can't hear you.
I can't either.
Sounds like somebody's driving.
Yep. Okay, I just saw them looking at
this. I'm not exactly sure what they're doing. Vacuuming, maybe.
Muting canceled.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah,
oh,
that's
better.
Oh, much better. Yeah, whatever just changed then worked.
Bruce, could you repeat what you said for the last 2 minutes?
Yes, okay, I'll certainly do that.
Thank you.
The other broad question, other than the technical one, was the broad question of, does the change impact on the competition of the in a broad sense, and that a number of the issues that we had described could be viewed as relating to competition. I don't know, John Jeffrey, would you be able to elaborate that on a little bit more? Like what sort of wording would be the way to frame the question? I think security and stability, I think it's fairly clear that we have a general principle that a change shouldn't affect stability, interoperability and security. What would be the best way of framing that in the context of competition?
Well, I think you already began to address that on the bottom category where you mentioned market forces. Can the market measure whether it's a good or bad idea? Does size matter? Is there a competition analysis involved? I think those are some of the issues that would go into a competition analysis, and perhaps we should seek, or you should seek, some advice as to how to broaden the scope of them.
Bruce, this is Lucy.
Yes, go ahead, Lucy.
I thought during that static that you mentioned trademarks and maybe perhaps brand, and I guess, has there been any discussion on where we incorporate the impact that it might have on legal rights of others, including any IP rights?
I think the wording that we used in the meeting in Rome was something along the lines of, does it impact the rights of third parties? And it didn't specifically mention trademark rights. It was more generically phrased.
Okay.
Perhaps, Lucy, it's Marilyn, are you suggesting it should say rights of others including?
I don't know whether it needs to be that specific, but just I don't see where it says it's likely to impact. Again, I'm looking at the quick look process. Is that right? Okay. I don't see where it says it's is the change likely to impact the legal rights of third parties?
Yeah, I don't either.
This is John. Within the guidelines, the approval criteria that you discussed earlier, there were guidelines that included sections on the impact on third parties. It had a series of questions. It had the market forces section, and I think you know, some of those issues are already covered there because they're very broadly worded.
Yeah, it's not on the diagram, Lucy. It was it was the list of criteria that was drafted during the meeting in Rome.
Right.
There's about 20 categories. I'm just trying to bring it up, but it will be on the GNSO website somewhere. I guess what I can do is resend the list, which I'll do after this call, and just try to categorise it into the two areas of technical and competition, and then allow members of the committee to comment on those, and if they want them further elaborated, we can agree on that. But the general approach was, rather than coming up with 20 odd issues, to try and group them into those two main areas. I guess the question is, is the two main areas sufficient, or whether we need a third main area?
Yeah, and I guess that's my point, is I don't see where the impact on the legal rights falls within either of these.
Right. Are you able to comment on that, John? Because I must admit, I'm a bit unclear on that as well. If we were to pick one of the issues as being whether it impacts the legal rights of others, and I guess legal rights can be fairly general, because presumably there's lots of legal jurisdictions, and whether that needs to be a bit more specific, and perhaps it's the international legal rights being...
Obviously we have to be concerned about the impact that it has on IP rights of others, and so even if we were to narrow it there, where in either of these would that fall?
Bruce, put me in the...
Okay, can you, John, are you able to comment on that question?
Yes, I don't think it's in the breakdown of criteria that you provided earlier. It does not specifically go to the intellectual property.
I know Kiyoshi brought it up in Rome.
I just wanted this debate to go on for a little while. Nick and I were talking about legitimate interest, which I think did survive and was placed in the last version of our Rome meeting.
Yeah, I'll be happy if I could finish my comment. I was going to read the specific thing that you did at. Under the impact on third parties, one of the criteria that you did list was, could it harm legitimate interests? And there was, in parentheses, an example being intellectual property rights.
Yeah, and then the thing, I think we have both a legitimate interest, meaning all kinds of vested rights, and then particularly, yes, intellectual property rights.
But I think it would be useful for the council to look at these criteria again, because we were thinking of these as guidelines for the review and for the broader topical headings that would be covered by these guidelines.
Excuse me, I lost you.
I said I think it would be useful for the council to look at the list of criteria again, because we were looking at these guidelines as, or at these criteria as guidelines that might be used for the two different types of reviews, the two different buckets.
Okay. Okay, now, Lucy, I don't correct me if I'm wrong, but what we were trying to express in Rome, and I think we reached consensus, is, we are most of, if not all, of GNSO Council reps are concerned with stability. That's a general principle. Now, under that principle, we have a list of things that concern us, which go from the very operational to the competition part that is, of course, very important to the registrars, to the legitimate rights and intellectual property rights, which are important to us. So I think that what we discussed in Rome was particularly this need for stability and predictability. And then under this umbrella, we have that list of 15 or 20 different things that we think are important for the well-being of the DNS.
Can you put me in the queue?
Yeah, you're in the queue, Ken. Yeah, keep going, Kiyoshi. So what's your conclusion?
My conclusion is I completely agree with Lucy. We think that we reached consensus regarding the importance of stability of the internet, and that within that general principle of stability, there are a series of issues, your 20 issues, that according to us are important to attain that stability.
So you would view the legitimate interest, the line that was in the Anne of the Rhine meeting, which is John Clark, legitimate interests of third parties, including in brackets, including intellectual property. You would view that as under the topic of stability, then, is that correct?
Well, yes.
Okay.
This is Lucy. Can I be put in the queue?
Yep. I've got you in the queue, Lucy. Ken, you're next.
Yeah, there's a couple that I'd like to learn about ensuring it should be protected as a result. We have to be very careful with how issue of this specific is working to see in those terms possible one may, let's take an example, registered an institute, a change, possibility exists, someone may contest free service as violation, for instance, to make sure the situation where a organization is technical would put in a position where it may be contested service or could be contested with a patent issue. So I think we need to be careful as to stability. I don't want to see litigation in a specific issue like being issued to create prop sense, and I'd like to hear
So Ken, you're giving the example of if there was a patent issue around a proposed service and whether that's ICANN's responsibility or I guess with that would be dealt with via private means between the registry operator and the party that holds the patent. Is that the question that you had, Ken?
Bruce, it is. I'm sorry, I keep muting and unmuting myself here. I want to get into a situation where a service offering could lead as a result to try to service as being a violation of right. I think that's what or and I don't think I can should be put in the middle of
of resolving a I guess an intellectual property dispute between the two parties.
Or even worse, where I can would be
Bruce.
To delay.
I'm having trouble following this. Is everybody having the same problem?
I am.
We're only getting about every other word, unfortunately.
I get it. Ken, every third word.
Right. We're getting a lot of echo on your line there, Ken. I don't know whether you can, if you're using a speakerphone, if you can take yourself off speakerphone or...
Yeah, I took it off. Be better now?
Yep.
I'm sorry. Basically, the biggest concern I have is I can be... Well, Pat would... how do I put it? As a result of the guidelines, delay the... of a red... because it's... by an outside party basis.
I'm sorry, that's not any better for me.
Yeah, it's not very hard to understand you.
Yeah, same thing.
I'm sorry, I can't do any.
You are now muted.
I'll, could you dial back in, perhaps?
I'll mute.
If Ken would like to submit the question in writing to me, I'd be happy to answer it to the whole panel.
Or
or perhaps Ken could email it now to someone who's online and it could be read.
I wish I could, Marilyn.
Call
City. Okay.
I'll
mail it.
Okay.
Okay.
Can I get in queue, Bruce? I have a related point in relation to patents.
Okay, Marilyn, I'll put you in queue after Lucy. I will just ask what I think Ken was asking and then see if John can comment on that, and then I'll invite Ken to submit his question after the call. But I think what he's asking, John, is if there is a dispute between, say, the registry operator and another party in relation to some sort of intellectual property, his concern is that ICANN then gets involved in making a ruling on that when that's something that would probably normally be handled outside ICANN. Are you able to comment on that, John?
Obviously, we would not want to be creating a new mechanism for dispute resolution for parties having intellectual property issues, for example. But that said, in that it might be relevant to the approval of a new registry service, it certainly might be something that needs to be considered as part of the process.
Can I get on the queue?
So, John, so what you're saying is that you would look at that amongst all the other issues to make a decision rather than actually making a decision on that specific point. Is that correct?
I think it's impossible to pre-guess what the hypothetical might be in that situation. Certainly it should be one of the various criteria that would be considered.
Okay. Next in the queue was Lucy.
That's my question.
Can I be on the queue, Bruce, please?
Who's that, Kiyoshi, is it?
Yes, please. Yes.
Okay, I'll put you after Marilyn. Okay, Lucy, go ahead.
Okay, well, it's unfortunate I wasn't able to understand Ken because I usually agree with him. So, I'm just concerned again that when we're talking about avoiding abusive registration practices and being concerned that these changes might have an impact or result in some type of abuse of registration practices. And I don't think that these two broad categories, as broad as they are, actually incorporate that possibility. So I would like for us to maybe work on these two categories and either broaden them or include a third one.
Okay, if it was going to be a third one, what would you suggest that be?
Well, I did get enough of Ken's comments to know that he is concerned about ICANN being involved in any dispute between two parties on IP issues. And maybe the legitimate interest that Kiyoshi recommended, that wording is not the right wording. But we need to come up with something. I don't have an answer right off the top of my head.
Okay. Yeah, well, perhaps something that's something that could be suggested on the mailing list then, if you might talk to Kiyoshi further as well and make a suggestion on that topic.
Okay.
Marilyn, you're next in the queue.
Yeah. I remember having part of this discussion at our meeting in Tanzania. I no longer, but I used to, do the policy for AT&T Standards Group. And I guess what's coming across to me is a potential problem in relation to, and I fully agree that we don't want ICANN in the middle of resolving a patent dispute, but I do see a potential problem if a party implements a proprietary solution that limits interoperability and limits the ability of others to interact with that solution without having to pay an exorbitant fee, or if they are given restricted access to the proprietary, I'm going to call it a standard in this case, while the party who introduces it has full and unfettered access to all the features. I've certainly seen that done. I know you'll be shocked to know that. And I am very much aware that it is a competitive practice in some parts of the industry. So I do think, you know, that we should be looking at something like standards that are based that are developed in open processes. This is not a comment about open source, let me be clear, that are developed in open collaborative processes and are licensed on non-proprietary terms and conditions. That doesn't put ICANN in the process of getting involved in a patent dispute, but it does establish a criteria for what kind of standards should be implemented. Some may feel that goes too far, but I don't think we would want to find ourselves in the other situation.
Yeah, so that's you're viewing that in the general topic of interoperability, I gather. Is that
mm-hmm.
correct?
Yeah.
I think that's a reasonable way of viewing that. And if, as you say, it was a very closed standard that required, you know, purchase of an expensive set of software of some sort from one vendor, then it wouldn't be particularly interoperable.
Right.
I think we had Kyoshi, you were next in the queue.
Thanks. First of all, I understand Ken's concern, and I think it's a very valid and a very current one. The thing is, let's take a look at disputes that are happening today regarding IP rights. These disputes, neither ICANN nor the registrars or the panelists, or WIPO, or the panelists are involved. These are mechanisms that very clearly define that only the contesting parties are a part of, if you will. So I don't see a risk there, because I'm sure we can reach a moderate wording saying that, of course, a trademark dispute between a registry and a registrar is not going to be a part of these processes, or a patent dispute between a user and a registry, or vice versa. I think those matters are clearly without the scope of any policy of ICANN, as is the case with the UDRP. Now, regarding Lucy's comment, I agree. I mean, this is only addressed at general practices. That is, any trademark dispute that may arise between the registry and the user, well, that's a private dispute. But if looking at some sort of change, it may be found that there is a generalized abuse of any kinds of rights, then that's when this process steps in. It's not about particular patents or particular rights of any other kind. And I'll be more than happy to work with Lucy and the rest of the group to find a more eloquent term than legitimate right. Now, with respect to Marilyn's point, I completely understand it. I just think that this is more a competition issue, and I do think it has to be included. I mean, we can't adopt a digital signature system that is patented, because otherwise everybody else would have to pay royalties, of course. But I think that falls within the competition field. Thanks, Bruce.
Bruce, can I offer a comment on that, please?
Yeah, go ahead, Mark.
Kishi, I think we probably need to move on from this, but I don't think that ICANN should be saying that a solution could not have intellectual property associated with it. I think we have to find a balance. We shouldn't be, and perhaps this is one of the discussions that we ought to try to have on the list of what is that balance.
Yeah, certainly with the IETF standards, they still have intellectual property associated
right.
with them, but usually there's royalty-free
right.
licenses
right.
made available, and often it's in the best interests of that company
right.
That has that license to do so, because it gets broader acceptance of that technology, and they generally add value to that on top of their patent.
And there's normally an assessment, sorry for interrupting, but there's normally an assessment, and if there's any other kind of standard, then the other standard is going to be put in the balance, too. So, but I think that's just a competition issue, you know? I mean, you have this standard, which is very good, but it's proprietary and it's expensive. Okay. Then we have this other standard, which is not as good, but the royalties are, you know, a little lower. And it's just a matter of deciding what you need.
Okay. Any other discussion on this point, on the criteria? Okay, the next area of discussion was on the appeals process, and initially when we were looking at this, we were thinking that we may design our own appeals process, and having reviewed the bylaws, as I think others on the committee had suggested, there's an existing process in the bylaws called the reconsideration process, and reading the criteria for that reconsideration process is to be used if either the board has made a decision where there is some information, some material information that the board didn't have available at the time, or the staff has made a decision that doesn't comply with an ICANN policy or whatever. That's the first level of appeals, and then after reconsideration, if an outside party believes that ICANN has acted outside its mission and outside its bylaws, then a party can request an independent review panel review whether the board has acted within the bylaws. I don't believe that second process has been used recently, or certainly not since the new bylaws, but the reconsideration process, there are a number of examples of that in the past couple of years. Having discussed this with the General Counsel, the view was that it wouldn't make sense for the GNSO to create a new appeals process specific to the case of the approving changes, because in any case, the reconsideration process would still be there, and you'd end up creating another level of dispute resolution. There's also dispute resolution clauses within the registry agreements themselves, so it didn't seem to add a lot of value to start creating more and more dispute processes when there's already several available. Are there any questions or discussion on this point?
Bruce, it's Marilyn.
Yeah, go ahead, Marilyn.
I think it would be more effective for us to be able to work within the existing framework, and I for a number of reasons. But I also note that there may be, and this would apply even if counsel were to have undertaken developing a special process, there are going to be special skills required. And I believe my comments earlier made note of the fact that I did not think that generic processes could handle the reconsideration, that it did have to be specific to understanding ICANN and understanding ICANN's documents. And so my comment would just be that whoever's doing the reconsideration, I think that there will be a certain amount of expertise that is required. And I'm not sure that I understand where the identification and selection of those parties would come in.
Okay, the reconsideration process as it's drafted in the bylaws is actually a subcommittee of the board itself.
I know.
And so I guess your question is then, how would that reconsideration committee operate? I assume that reconsideration committee, and I think it's even in the wording of it, has access to external expertise. So if it was a technical or competition issue, and presumably it would access the general counsel itself on issues of the ICANN contracts and documents. John, are you able to comment on that at all, how the reconsideration committee is able to bring in specialist advice?
Yeah, that the if you look at the reconsideration bylaws under Article 6, or actually Article 4, Section 2, Paragraph 3, there is specific authority granted to the reconsideration committee to evaluate the request for review and determine whether a stay of the contested action pending resolution is appropriate, to conduct a factual investigation, and to request additional written submissions from the affected party or other parties. And then the final thing is to make a recommendation to the Board of Directors on the merits of the request. But I think under 3D, where they are permitted to request submissions from the affected parties or from other parties, they could in fact seek additional expertise.
John, Bruce, I'd like to follow up. I think that's very helpful, John, and I do think, and this is a strongly held view of mine about the Reconsideration Committee overall, that in order to be to have the absolute amount of legitimacy that is necessary to support ICANN, that and since this will apply to decisions that are about previous staff decisions,
or board decisions, actually.
Or board decisions, right? Well, I was actually thinking about, I was thinking more about decisions the board might have taken upon advice of staff, right? That I'm assuming the reconsideration process would include a provision for a non-staff resource, including legal, to support a reconsideration process.
Also under paragraph 14 of the same section of the bylaws.
Okay.
Reconsideration committee may request information relevant to the request from third parties. And it says specifically, to the extent any information gathered is relevant to any recommendation by the reconsideration committee, it shall be stated in its recommendation. So I don't think that there is a limit to what type of expertise they could obtain. Certainly they could obtain legal advice, they could obtain technical advice, they could obtain any range.
Right.
Yeah, I guess it probably comes down to what the grounds for reconsideration are, I suspect, Marilyn. So if it's, for example, that there's grounds for reconsideration on the basis that there was some new information available, it's probably not unreasonable that follow a process fairly similar to the approval process itself, in the sense that you'd use general counsel, you would use your competition or your technical experts to look at that new information. If the reconsideration is based on somehow misinterpreting an ICANN policy or ICANN bylaws, and it's some sort of essentially saying that the process made a mistake somehow, that would be the sort of thing that you would presumably then want to get some almost a second opinion, some independent advice on that. Would that be correct, Marilyn?
Well, I think that's right, but if you look in the reconsideration process, four or five steps down, we have any ICANN staff comments on the request to be made public.
Yes. Which is what I thought was reasonable.
What are we? I just want to understand, if we're assuming we're going to use the reconsideration process, we're publishing the decision to consider the request, and then what kind of comments would we be asking the staff for?
Well, wouldn't if for example, someone asserts that they have some new material that wasn't considered in their reconsideration request, the first question I would be asking is, is this new material or was it considered? And so you might ask the staff, did this, was this considered? And the staff might say, yes, it was considered, and here's the information or the evidence. So then you would be arguing that it's not new information at that point. I'm just giving an example, but...
I think we just need to be careful that we have not inserted the staff in a functional way into the reconsideration process in a way that puts them in jeopardy, so to speak, in terms of this not being a legitimate process, or puts the process in jeopardy. And I'm not sure that I presently understand. I'm not disagreeing. I'm just not sure I presently understand who's operating the process.
I think it's the board subcommittee that's in charge of the process.
That's correct. The chair of the reconsideration committee, there's a specific designated chair, would be responsible for administering the process. They would seek staff help, and in fact, the general counsel and other staff is available to the reconsideration committee as required. In the instance that the reconsideration committee or the general counsel or others saw a conflict between an earlier position taken and what advice might be needed to be provided to the reconsideration committee, we would provide to the reconsideration committee or to the board outside legal advice or other advice to cover any such conflict.
Yeah, I suspect probably the approach, I mean, one, you can actually have a look at some past reconsideration processes, Marilyn, because there's a couple documented to see how they work. And I guess ultimately, if the GNSA Council is unhappy with the operation of the reconsideration process, we could review it and then recommend to the board a change in the bylaws. But the question is whether it's worth spending a lot of time up front on that. I think it's one of these things where we need to get some experience and see how it operates.
Just one additional point, if I could add. The reconsideration committees are used on various boards in different types of organizations on a regular basis. It is a fairly normal approach to doing this. And in the event that Marilyn raises it, is a very good possible conflict-oriented event. There are prior processes that occur in other boards, and there is a path to follow.
And I'm happy with that, John. I just think when we write this up, Bruce, we should probably just make sure we, you know, note the in our written support. Note that provision is made to deal with any conflicts.
Yes.
Thanks.
Yeah, because essentially, as I understand it, Marilyn, you're wanting to avoid the situation where it's the same people that made the original decisions doing the reconsideration. So what you're really looking at is there's some level of independence in the process.
I want to avoid that, and I want to avoid situations that I might refer to public food fights we may have seen in the community in the past.
Okay.
Oh.
Okay. Well, that's all the questions that the council raised in its last meeting for consideration. So I think we've gone through all those. I think the next steps from this point is having another look at the criteria that we discussed in Rome. Emailed a copy just for reminding the committee, and I'll have a go at trying to divide those criteria under the two broad headings of competition and technical. And then if Lucy and Kiyoshi can sort of have a look at that and then see whether they think we need to have a third broad heading or whether the criteria can be adjusted so that they fit under the existing two broad headings. And then the next issue, I guess, is having a look at the general flowchart, and if anyone's got any comments on those. The only change I've made to those flowcharts is really explicitly including the ICANN board approval part of the process, so that's clear. The other general question I have, and this is perhaps directed more towards the ICANN staff generally, is, and whether John or Dan could comment, but in the quick look process, how much time does the ICANN staff feel it needs to conduct that process? This is a process where ICANN staff would seek some external advice and then be able to make a recommendation to the board on whether to approve a process, basically assuming that they've gone and got the advice and the advice says there's no issue, that they would then make the recommendation to the board. How long would you require to do that actual quick look process?
Bruce, in preparation for this call, Paul Verhoeve and Barbara and I had a conversation, and Barbara is going to conduct the review with a number of staff members to try to provide some specific information back to the council on this matter and the amount of time that it might take.
Okay,
we don't have that answer yet.
That would be good. Okay, so there's the flow charts, and I ask the committee members to have a look at those flow charts and let me know if there's anything else that needs to be added, but I think they give the overall structure of the process. Then the other question is refining the criteria, if the committee members can have a look at that on the list. And then the third issue is the timing, and the timing of the board part of the process is fairly well understood. And if the ICANN staff can come back to the committee with their recommendation on how much time they believe they need for the quick look process. And I guess we would probably try to get some sort of recommendation before the GNSO council itself on the 6th, which I guess would be publishing, would be to complete the preliminary report, and that preliminary report can then go out for public comment.
I'm sorry, the date again?
I think the next council meeting is June the 6th.
June the 10th.
And I'm suggesting that in that call, we look for the council to approve a preliminary report to go out for public comment.
Muting cancelled.
Bruce, the meeting is on June the 10th.
Oh, good.
Okay. Sorry. I've probably got that debate for some other reason.
Thanks, Glenn. I was panicking there for a moment.
I think that's basically it. Are there any other comments or questions before I close the call? Okay, I'll thank everybody for attending and thank the General Counsel and the ICANN staff members for attending.
Thank you, Bruce.